Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go, hour two, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs, be a sub above. Joy Taylor is, of course, joining me today. You know, I will say this, defending the big, powerful, rich college football coach, it's harder to do because it's easier for me to just say I'm pro player, get no pushback on social. It's much harder to take my position, which is players don't have the leverage, the power that the coach is doing. They don't matter as much because Michigan brings in 25 new great players every year. It's not saying they have no value, but if you look at what Brian Kelly did to a massive brand that was dying at Notre Dame, he got $100 million. Mel Tucker got $95 million. Mel Tucker, who I love. Brian Kelly has 19 times more wins. Is he worth $250 million? Player, it's easy to go on the air or to go to Twitter and say, I'm for the players. They should all be paid. Very few have any leverage. Go to Kansas basketball. Been good for a zillion years. Name their five best players. Wilt. I mean, they literally changed the program because they get five-star guys every year. So the players are valuable. But when I hear a lot of media buzzkills lament what coaches make. It's called leverage. Leverage is money, leverage is power, and timing is both. And so when you are getting up against the early signing period and you have Brian Kelly's record and Lincoln Riley's record and the market, LSU's a big brand and USC's a big brand, they're bringing the bag. And by the way, these great players in the pros, many of them will have the exact same leverage. It's called free agency. And so remember, just because as a broadcaster, I had no leverage at 27. Even my bosses would acknowledge today, I got leverage. I'm good. I got a lot of people like me. I had none at 27, nor should I have. Brian Kelly's got leverage because he's been great for 20 years. He rebuilt a staggeringly important brand. It doesn't mean Kyle Hamilton doesn't have leverage. By the way, I pay him too because he's part of my podcast network. He doesn't have Brian Kelly leverage. So it's always been easier for a media person to defend the players. They've never had more power. They can transfer anytime. They can flip it anytime. They can skip bowl games, 99% of the bowl games. They can decommit. They get paid. Players have never had more power. But they're like 21. They're not going to have the power of a 55-year-old coach. I don't have the power of Eric Shanks. I don't have that kind of power. He's negotiating with Roger Goodell. He's negotiating with Olympic committees and World Cup committees. The idea that any 21-year-old outside of a Silicon Valley genius would have the power of a 55-year-old female executive of a Silicon Valley brand. No, he wouldn't. It's not the way the world works. It's not the way the players eventually do have massive power. You tell me LeBron didn't have power. Chris Paul. How long was his contract? Remember the contract we were like, he's almost shot, isn't he? Players do have power. They don't have it when they're 19. So I'll give you an example. Here's an example of a player having power. He's not even a great player. Jimmy Garoppolo. So we would both say he's a B quarterback. But he's good.
Yes. Yeah. Played in the Super Bowl.
If you and I rank quarterbacks, we'd probably both have him around 14, 15-ish.
Yes. Okay. He's healthy.
And going into the season, everybody was like, yeah, he's done. Think this morning. If Aaron Rodgers doesn't leave Green Bay, if Russell Wilson doesn't leave Seattle, both probably true. We have six teams minimum that need a quarterback. Pittsburgh, Washington, Denver, Houston, Carolina, New Orleans. Three others that will consider it. Giants, Dolphins, Detroit. He will be a veteran Super Bowl quarterback on the market. Do you understand the leverage the 49ers will have for Jimmy Garoppolo? So players don't even have to be great. Mel Tucker's no guarantee he's a great coach. I think he is, but he had leverage. The San Francisco 49ers have Garoppolo. He's not a great quarterback. They'll have insane leverage. That's what this is all about. Leverage is money. Leverage is power. And timing is both. The Niners are going to go, if Jimmy stays healthy, into this offseason, 10 teams need quarterbacks. I'm not even counting Matt Ryan in Atlanta. They do, but they can't get out of his contract. He's too big of a cap hit. So we always lament players have value. It's just not at 21 in a college program. They got a little value. Bryce Young's probably making, I'm going to guess here. I have no idea. I know my company's paying a little bit. He's probably making $600,000 this year. And Bryce is such a great kid, he's probably giving it to his offensive lineman. A year ago, he got free pizza in the commissary. This year, he makes $600,000. And we don't think, but it's rare. 20-year-old athletes, 21-year-old athletes. I mean, look at even in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers can be franchise tagged. Now, you get a lot of money for franchise tag, but you're kind of trapped, right? Like, you get more if you went to the market. So we get all worked up about this stuff. The players, anyway, I'm just done ranting. I just tried to make a point on when I see people lament what coaches make. 99% of football coaches in, there's 360 Division I college basketball programs. There's 130 Division I football programs. I'm not even counting Division II and Division III. 99% of coaches at all these levels don't make anything. Brian Kelly does. Okay, there's about 12, 15 football coaches that make, wow.
What is he supposed to do? Turn it down?
Just weird.
I don't like having conversations with people who haven't been offered $100 million to do something about what they would do if they were offered $100 million.
The only people I know that have been are coaches.
Unless you've made $100 million or someone has brought you a $100 million check.
Yes.
The preaching about what you would do with that check is a waste of everyone's time. It's $100 million. There's not a whole lot I wouldn't do for $100 million. I'm going to say that.
All right. He's one of the great college football guys. He's Fox's The Athletic. He does a ton of stuff. Writer for The Athletic. Follow him there. I pay my monthly. Bruce Feldman now joining us. I'm off my soapbox now. I'm done ranting. Mr. Feldman, Mr. Connected. So, you know, it's interesting. And I said this to start last hour. I said, listen, whenever you lose somebody, your girlfriend breaks up with you, your boyfriend breaks up with you, your college coach leaves you, a network loses a talented person, people have hurt feelings. You feel like you've been dumped. And I understand that. Like, you have a right, if somebody dumps you at the altar, to be sad. Like, Oklahoma fans have a right to be upset. So do Notre Dame fans. I think they'll both be fine. They're great programs. There's great coaches. But there is this whole thing. It's not that they left. It's how they left. Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley are kind of leaving the same way. Isn't the only difference one fan base thinks they can win a national title?
I'm going to make a different distinction
here.
So on the Brian Kelly part of it, I think one of the issues that some people have on this is they're still technically alive for the playoff.
That's right.
So coaches constantly preach finish, all in, all those things. And if somehow, and it's not that far-fetched, there could be a couple of losses this weekend, Notre Dame could be in the playoff mix.
Yeah.
They legit have a shot. It's an outside shot.
Yeah.
But to make the playoff, and Brian Kelly's gone. So the whole aspect of finish, and all the things coaches preach.
It's hypocrisy.
This is hypocrisy. Now, some of the other stuff you said a minute ago, I do agree with. I mean, Nick Saban has paid a fortune. Nick Saban is underpaid compared to what he has done, not just for Alabama, but for that entire community, the university community, the state, quite honestly. Dabo Swinney. Still, also, probably underpaid given what he has done to Clemson, the brand, the university, all those things. There are a bunch of other guys now who have gotten swept up because they're getting paid millions upon millions, and they're going to be disastrous hires.
Yeah.
And that's where the school and the boosters, they're out, and they've made bad investments, right? I think what has happened in this wave, and you mentioned Mel Tucker. Mel Tucker's done a really good job at Michigan State. I think what they've done is really they're investing in him to say, we believe he is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
And so they ponied up. And I think that is on, you know, former walk-on basketball player at MSU who has hit it big since. And look, you know, these aren't like Jerry Jones, but I think for a lot of people who can't own pro sports teams, right now, I think they see the investment of their alma mater. They have a connection of a feeling of ownership. And well, I think that's how they've done it.
Yeah, Dan Gilbert owns the Cavs. He's probably the biggest Michigan State booster. There's another one that's huge. There's three of them. And they're all sports fans. Like, sometimes your biggest, your richest alums are not sports fans. It just happens that Michigan State's got three billionaire alums, and they're huge sports fans. That's a great point. One does own a pro team. Two don't. And so they're like, this is kind of our...
They have a sense of ownership. They can be, as one football coach I know said, they can be the hot shot at their country club now. You know, and it's like, look, that's a big deal. And if Mel leads Michigan State to the playoff or a national title, that investment will be very, very prudent.
So sometimes lost in all this is that we believe these big brands, Alabama, USC, Oklahoma, they've always got all great talent, and a new coach will come in and flip a switch. You don't think that's true for Lincoln Riley at USC. I believe you think it's a little bit more of a challenge.
I do, and it has nothing to do with Lincoln Riley. For Fox, I did the UCLA-USC game. And so I was around the USC program for a couple of days, and you'd look physically at them. I've lived out here, Colin, for 20 years. This was the worst-looking USC team kind of on the hoof since I've been out here. It's just very underwhelming. And look, there's reasons for that is when you've had basically a lame duck head coach as Clay Helton has been for like 3 years, that undermines recruiting in a big way. And then I think what has also happened, and look, this is no fault of the assistants. It's no fault of the interim Dante Williams. I think that you had basically a lot of folks who feel like they've been independent contractors.
Yeah.
So there's been really shaky leadership at best. And so I think all those factors have conspired to a very, very average roster. I mean, I don't really care what the star system says of like, oh, this guy used to be a five-star and this guy came in as a high four-star. A lot of those guys were probably overrated because of they were committed to USC. And I'm not saying all of them were that way, but I think a bunch of them, that's how some of that stuff works from when you talk to enough coaches about it. So I think what Lincoln Riley is inheriting is a roster that needs a massive upgrade, right? There was Drake London. He's an All-American, but Drake London was on crutches for our UCLA game. He was, you know, when he was out, they were way limited, and their defense, there's nothing close to Leonard Williams. There's no Troy Polamalu's. There's no Brian Cushing's there.
Yeah.
So I think that is the biggest challenge. Now, what bodes well for him is Lincoln Riley has a huge name and reputation for developing offensive players, right? We've seen it, multiple Heisman guys, multiple first picks of the draft, cutting edge offense. Guys are going to want to come play for him. They already do. A bunch of these Southern California kids were committed for the 2023 class. Guess where they're going to end up going, right? They're going to end up staying home now. The question will be how quickly can he, in part through the portal and in part through recruiting, can he elevate the defensive side of the ball and the offensive line? Because that is a huge issue.
Yeah, O-line for USC.
Dreadful. Dreadful.
It is. They have one NFL prospect of the 17 kids on scholarship. It is a disaster. It has been they've paid no attention to it.
What's good, though, there is, look, he's expected to bring Bill Biedenboe from Oklahoma. He's the reason why this isn't a regular air raid, because they have a really physical run game. They're very creative.
They do.
He's arguably the best offensive line coach in college football. If he comes out here as we expect, that is a huge coup. Guys, you know, that I think that will take care of some of the softness that you see in right now in this program.
Okay, so I hear, let's talk Brian Kelly to LSU. So, you know, people can be upset, whatevs. Let's talk this. People have said he's a weird fit, kind of. Winning tends to solve fit. I mean, Nick Saban was not from Alabama. I always tend to think, you win stuff. Pete Carroll, when he got the USC job, maybe people thought it was an awful hire. And it's like, old NFL, kind of quirky guy. The quirkiness was perfect when he was winning, right? Like, we all saw it as an asset. So let's just talk. Brian Kelly, LSU. Will they win quick? How does it feel to you?
It feels a little odd. But like you said, I mean, Les Miles from Ohio. You know, Saban's from West Virginia, and it was up in the Big Ten and spent a bunch of time. You know, he's bounced around. But I think Brian Kelly, don't underestimate him. He's a really smart coach. You know, what you said, Notre Dame was a mess. Literally, it was a mess. The locker room was a mess. Everything was a mess. And he turned it into a legit, consistent playoff contender, right? And I think he knows exactly what he's doing. Also, I give him credit. He evolved in the job. And
he did.
I think that
so did Harbaugh this year.
They did, yeah. And I think one of the things with Brian Kelly that maybe doesn't get said enough is Notre Dame job. 5 years at Notre Dame is a long time. It's like dog years at other places. He was there for 12 years, right? So that's an extensive amount of time. I think what is going to be interesting here is the area where Notre Dame has been best in the last decade is they've had great offensive lines.
Tremendous.
And right now, knowing the LSU roster really well, they were very average at best, if not worse than that, this year. And their O-line room is seriously going to be depleted because a lot of those guys have played for a long time, and they're going to be out of eligibility. So if you're Notre Dame and if you're Brian Kelly, you're going to have to really hit the portal really, really hard because you don't have the bodies that you're going to inherit to be able to compete at a high level. Now, there's some really gifted defensive linemen. There's a bunch of really good receivers and a ton of really good defensive backs. I mean, there's talent on the roster. The O-line is a big concern. And the question I would put to you, Colin, is what is doing a good job for Brian Kelly? Doing a good job for him, if you don't win a national title within 4 years.
Three, I'd say. They're not going to wait four.
Yeah.
He'll get heat by year two. I do think he'll win. But
let's win, though. I mean, him going 10-2, that's not going to be good enough. You win, you got to win a national title there. They just fired the guy who won a national title. It was less than 2 years within him winning the national title. And he's from there. He's one of them. Brian Kelly's from Boston.
Yeah. He looks like he's from Boston.
He does. Look, and he, you know what? Good to his credit, he is, I think he's sincere and authentic in terms of like, he's not trying to be somebody else. Right. He knows who he is at 60. Let's see how it goes.
Okay. By the way, Joy, remind me to bring up Lane Kiffin to Miami. I have to go to another question first. Just remind me.
Okay.
We're not letting you out of here without that. Because okay. I'm rooting for it. She's rooting for it. Nothing against Ole Miss. I want to say this about Michigan. I love college football. I do not talk it as much as I did 7 years ago because the sport's become increasingly insular. I loved this weekend. I love Michigan beating Ohio State. I love Lincoln Riley coming west because Denver West, it matters. When USC played Texas, it got a 22.5 rating. Now it gets 15s. It's not that college football's bad. It's too insular. So I watched Michigan and I thought, okay, I could take two paths on this. It's a one-off. It was cold. But as I watched them play, Bruce, I thought, you can duplicate that because they owe it. They have found an identity. Now, I'm not saying they're going to Columbus and knocking Ohio State backwards next year. But that will be what they will look like going forward because that looked like to me, oh, you can do that. You don't have to be the fastest team. You don't have to have Alabama receivers. Michigan's had great old linemen, good backs, tight ends for my entire life. So your takeaway on the win, I think it's bigger than just the day. It felt identity changing and momentum changing.
This felt to me a lot like Stanford 2.0 Jim Harbaugh because it was the more physical team, as you said, really good on the offensive line. Hassan Haskins was a punishing runner who just kept moving the ball down the field. And I think what is key there is, like, give credit to Josh Gattis, the offense coordinator. He took a lot of what his buddy Joe Moorhead had whipped Ohio State with when Oregon went in there and just had them on their heels. And there was a lot of different stuff that they couldn't handle. I don't want to say they weren't prepared for it. They just couldn't handle. The other thing that was big was Aiden Hutchinson, David Ojabo, Joshua, those guys got after Ohio State. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson looks like he could be a legit top five pick. He was dominant.
Oh.
It's been a long time in this rivalry since Michigan had the best defensive player in the game. And there was no question they had that. So,
you know who reminded me a little bit? J.J. Watt.
Yeah, it was probably a slightly lighter J.J., yeah. But relentless. He's every bit as explosive.
Can't block him. He made the Ohio State's tackles, who are pros, completely overwhelmed.
It was, you know, it was like pretty amazing to see. Now, here's where I think Harbaugh said this after the game. He's like, I think this is the start of something. This is the beginning.
That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah. I mean, now that all of a sudden, and look, he deserves credit from this point because he got younger. Like we talked about Kelly evolving, you mentioned it, got younger. When he brought in Josh Gattis, that was a good move. When he found Mike McDonald, nobody knew who he was other than his brother because he was on the Ravens staff. That was a brilliant addition. And I think now that they will be able to recruit, people are going to buzz about, whoa, do you see what's going on with Michigan and Jim Harbaugh? I want to go be there. I don't think you've heard that in years. And so we'll see where this goes, but they got momentum now.
No, it's you brought up something really interesting. Brian Kelly at Notre Dame is two Brian Kellys. There was a tragedy early. They couldn't kind of identify what they were. And then at some point he went, time out. We're a Northern power. We're going to go O-line like the Cleveland Browns is the centerpiece of it. And then there's a second 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. It's a different Notre Dame program. They can play with Georgias, mostly. I think, to your point, I think Michigan feels like this year, it's like, oh, okay, this is a different program now. So I'm excited for it. All right, I want to segue to this. Let's go, because I'm going to probably have you on before the games. So I want to go to the Lane Kiffin story. Lane Kiffin is different. I don't think Lane would ever fit at a Notre Dame.
Of course he wouldn't. That's nothing profound there. I mean,
even Michigan. But Miami's got a little toed. Miami's got a little coastal attitude. Miami's got a little swag. Sometimes they're borderline inappropriate. And I think, okay, Miami doesn't have the greatest facilities, nor do they pay what the big boys do. But Lane Kiffin to Miami, to me, feels absolutely right. The savior of the program. Am I nuts?
Not necessarily about this. You might be nuts about other stuff, but like this, I would say, look, Mario Cristobal has done a great job at Oregon. He is from there. He is of there. He is a Miami guy through and through. If they could get Mario Cristobal, I think that was
Can they afford him?
It depends. Is The Rock going to bring money out? I don't know who's going to. Like, where's the Miami money come from? I don't know on that, honestly. They have to sort out. They're close to, I think, having an AD in place. Remember, they're going through an AD search. If there's no Mario, I think there are some old Miami people, former Miami players, who do have some influence. They have more voice than at any other program in the country.
Okay,
there are a lot of those guys are interested in Lane, and Lane, I think, would have a hard time saying no if Miami came after him.
I think he knows it's a great fish. I fit. I know Lane well enough. In his off time, he loves to get in a boat with his kids and go fishing. He used to send me pictures when he was at that Florida job. It feels like Miami feels like Lane Kiffin. I think Brian Kelly looked like a Notre Dame football coach. It's like Brian Kelly, once he got out of the kind of the anger tunnel he was in, it was like, yeah, it kind of worked. Boston guy, Notre Dame. I mean, there are coaches that feel like schools.
Yeah, and also, by the way, you know, he's done a really good job at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss has been elevated. In the ACC, it's basically Clemson right now, and that's what you're shooting at. You don't have a lot of other stuff. You know, yeah, Pitt had a really good year, and NC State had a decent year. But, like, it's there for the taking. You're going to compete against Clemson, and you don't have to go like, push past, like, six other SEC heavyweights who are, honestly, they're better resourced than they are in Ole Miss. So that's the interesting part of that. And he has a ton of social media, you know, like a lot of the stuff that Miami, I think, buzzes about.
Yes.
It fits with him.
Yeah. All right, 1 minute left. Here's the committee last night. I tend to defend committees. I think it's hard. You're public. You get ripped. I think Oklahoma State, I said it 3 weeks ago, is the most underrated team in the country. I think they could play Georgia and make it uncomfortable, although I would take Georgia. So when you looked at the committee and you go Georgia 1 and Michigan 2 and Bama and Cincinnati and Oklahoma State and Notre Dame, I still think Ohio State would beat Notre Dame. I do not think Notre Dame has a national. They may have aspirations this year. I don't even think they're close to the top four or five teams. I think Oklahoma State would blow them out. I think Ohio State would beat them bad. Are you any problems with that, the group?
No, and I think, honestly, the issue for Notre Dame last week hurt them, not because they played Stanford and Stanford stinks this year, but more because Wisconsin lost to Minnesota. Well, why does that really matter that much?
That was their big one, wasn't it?
They needed Wisconsin, who they whipped early in the year, and Wisconsin had started to go on a roll. They needed Wisconsin not only to play for the Big Ten title, they needed to win it. If Wisconsin is 10-3, that would give Notre Dame a big-time win in their resume. Right now, arguably their best win is an 8-4 Purdue.
That's it.
Right?
It
you know, is. They just don't have enough.
Yep.
And I think that hurts them. I think
they were also soundly beaten at home by Cincinnati.
They were. Now, what is interesting is if Oklahoma State loses, or even if Michigan gets knocked off by Iowa, I think, or potentially Cincinnati could lose. To me, the most interesting thing right now is going to be SEC. If Georgia beats Alabama, and Alabama's a two-loss team, I wonder how far the committee would drop them, because you got to remember, if they lose, they're a two-loss team with one really good win. It's Ole Miss. After that, I mean, we saw them struggle badly with a bad LSU team, bad Florida team, not a good Auburn team, right? But they won those games. But if they're sitting there at 11-2, does the committee say, yeah, they're the fourth best team? Sorry, Georgia, you got to beat them again. I don't know how the committee kind of does that.
All right. That's why it's no fun to be on committees. It's very hard. Bruce Feldman, The Athletic. Boy, that we went 20 minutes on that.
Bruce, you going to come out to Carson to watch our game on Fox, the Mountain West game, San Diego State, Utah State?
No, I'm not. Are you deeply offended by that?
No, our bosses are, though. So.
Oh, okay. Right.
I know. You have leverage. I got it. I got it. I heard. I was listening.
A little tiny. Oh, this is a little granular.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Saturday, after finally beating Ohio State, Jim Harbaugh leads his second-ranked Michigan Wolverines into their first ever Big Ten championship game, looking to punch their ticket to the playoffs against number 13 Iowa. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
So I got Nick Wright and me arguing today, intense arguing. I've already got Lane Kiffin going to Miami. We've been talking about leverage all day long today. Listen, Mel Tucker's going to make $100 million. He's a 500 coach. I don't begrudge him at all. He's put 15 years into coaching. I think he's got it. I think he's got a persona. He's got a presence. But if you looked at his resume, you'd be like, he can't make what Brian Kelly makes. But he does because he has leverage. And Michigan State's boosters are billionaires, and they love sports.
You're worth what someone's willing to pay you.
Yes. And by the way, that's why college athletes at 19... six of them in the whole country are making money on NIL because most of them don't have leverage. Alabama quarterback, star program, Bryce Young, you can get some money. 99% of players, it's just easy to rush to your social media accounts and say, players deserve the same as coaches. No, they don't. Coaches are literally the CEO of a billion-dollar brand. Players, the following year, they bring in 25 new players. Players get hurt. They get tackled. Coaches don't get tackled. Like, you know they'll be there as long as they're winning.
Yeah, and it's also not the pros.
Yeah.
It's a different business model
in
the pros.
Players have never had more power. We got college football players making $100,000. And by the way, now can skip an irrelevant bowl game? And we're like, yeah, of course. We're on their side.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know why it has to be polarizing. Why does it have to be you support players?
Because I think there's
and that means you don't support coaches.
I think there's a percentage of people in the media. I think fans get it overwhelmingly. I think the media, you and I aren't in this. There's a percentage of people in the media who are resent the power. That a lot of people in the media, by the way, not just sports media, resent power. They attack power because they see power as bad, which, by the way, sometimes it can be. I'm a big believer in regulations on Wall Street. It's been proven if you don't have regulations on Wall Street, it gets corrupt fast. Like,
right.
Right. Like, so I am for lots of regulations. I live in a state in California. It's got a lot of regulations.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah. Like, California's got a lot of regulations. I'm a business owner. Like, I pay a lot for it. I'd rather have more regulations that creates a fairer opportunity than some of these states. I mean, you got states changing voting lines and where you can vote. It's like, yay, yeah. No thanks. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news. This is the Herdline News, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
There's nothing wrong with holding people accountable. But you're not paying his check. Like, you're not the one paying him.
Right.
Like, I get it when it's like, wait a minute, like, we're the taxpayers and we're paying for this, and then you can complain. But, like, I'm not losing any money because Brian Kelly went jealous.
Yeah, I'm not saying players don't have power. I'm saying do not.
Well, also just have some perspective and nuance on the situation.
Yeah, it's like everything else, there's nuance to it.
Yes.
If you have turned around a billion-dollar brand, you're going to be worth more than a 19-year-old wide receiver.
And I'm very, very pro-player about everything.
Yes.
But it's
and I think I'm 75-25 pro-player.
Yeah. So Daniel Jones might not play this week against the Dolphins. He suffered a strained neck in Sunday's game against the Eagles. Joe Judge says he's not ruled out for Sunday, but he did practice today. The plan, according to Joe Judge, is that Jones will also practice tomorrow and Friday and then undergo an evaluation. So Mike Glennon would get the start if Jones is out.
That's the bet of the week. Miami's going to
roll. It would be his first start of the season. Right. That's kind of why we're talking about this, because Miami has been on a roll.
Oh, hey, and by the way, I'm not a huge fan of Tua, but the comparisons to Breeze, when you look at his completion percentage, the one thing we said with Tua, even I said, he's accurate. Boy, is he. He's like 80% accurate.
He is, and that's, again, why the whole conversation around Tua and all of these young players is, if you're going to bring them into a situation, evaluate them.
Yeah.
Like, that's the San Francisco situation is an outlier. Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith is an outlier.
Yeah.
Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers is an outlier. In most of these situations, you need to find out what these players are.
Isn't it fascinating? So, like, Tua's going to win this weekend again. So Miami may very well either get into the playoffs or win, like, 8 of their last 9 games. And if Tua continues to complete 75% of his throws, it's a weak draft. And this is where I plead patience. They're probably not going to draft a quarterback because they need to still rebuild the offensive line.
Right.
And there's going to be none on the market. So Brian Flores will go into is his third year with Tua as his quarterback in a division with Josh Allen and Belichick and Mac Jones. So I think they almost have to give Tua another year. So when you always want to run these coaches out, I am absolutely certain that Brian Flores is an excellent coach. But he may go into next year with Tua again, and he's not a top 12 quarterback, and this is a league where it's hard to win a lot without a top 12 quarterback. People, you got to identify a coach beyond just what does he have as a quarterback? What does he have as an owner? Like Kevin Stefanski, historically crazy ownership, coach or a quarterback who's very
inconsistent.
Kevin Stefanski's the right guy.
Yeah. Yes.
Brian Flores.
I mean, we're talking about coaches a lot today in college space and in pros. Everyone, it's easy to run the coach out.
Yep.
It's easy to put the blame on the coach because the front office certainly isn't going to fire themselves. Ownership's not going anywhere. Whatever role they played in how this became the disaster that it is in the situation that you do that. But yes, Brian Flores is the right guy. Joe Judge is probably the right guy. They need the talent to be able to work with. And that's why now you're getting to see Tua in a full evaluation. You can see what he is.
Yeah.
And that's why bailing and being impatient and talking about Deshaun Watson, like, do it or don't. Yeah. But now, even no matter how Tua plays, how do you really feel about it at the end of the season if they don't win a playoff game? You really don't know because there's been so much disruption throughout the season. So they are 5-point underdogs to the Dolphins on Sunday, according to Fox Bet. So the Bills have officially placed Tre'Davious White on injured reserve. Mm-hmm. Tore his ACL on Thanksgiving against the Saints. This is a huge loss for the Bills. White allowed a 61.4 passer rating when targeted this season, according to Pro Football Focus. So that's the fourth lowest amongst all CBs with at least 25 targets. He's a huge part of their defense, and they're going to have to find a way to replace him. Dane Jackson is the one who will be replacing him right now. He's made 2 starts in his career, and he's played just 2 games this season, week 2 and week 12, when White went down with injury. They're 7-4 and are 1 game behind the Patriots in the AFC East. They host the Patriots on Monday night, and this is a massive Monday night game. They're currently 3-point favorites, according to Fox
Bet. I may have a party at my house for that game. That feels like a party game.
Is it in the moment? Is it the biggest game of the year?
It's gigantic.
It's very important.
Big.
And the Bills' defense without him is going to be a big adjustment.
Big.
I mean, they've been great this year, and he's been a cornerstone of that. So I think that's the biggest game of the year.
It's darn big.
I have
big.
To look, but it's pretty big. So LeBron was forced to miss last night's game against the Kings after testing positive for COVID-19. He was placed in health and safety protocols.
Yeah.
And he was given follow-up tests, and he's fully vaccinated and reportedly asymptomatic, which is great, but he could miss as many as 10 days, according to the protocols. He could return sooner if he returns at least 2 consecutive negative tests, so it might not be 10 days. But he's now missed 12 games this season, 2 with right ankle soreness, 8 with a strained stomach muscle, and 1 due to suspension in year 19. Now, they played well last night. They beat the Kings convincingly, which is what they needed to do. 117-92 without LeBron, and they are 8th in the Western Conference. So then over the next 10 days, they play the Clippers, Celtics. They're at the Grizzlies and at the Thunder, which is...
Oh, yeah. W's.
Not the Thunder. They struggled with the Thunder this year, but that's their lineup for the next 10 days.
They don't play the Suns, I don't think, until December 21. So they've been very fortunate with this LeBron stuff. They're playing dogs.
Well, they need to find a way to win without LeBron, and that is on Anthony Davis. And as Nick Wright said earlier, he's got to stop playing the way he's playing. He can't shoot 19% from the outside consistently. Like, that's not – you're not aiding the team in that space. Yeah. Like, so they'll have to figure it out without LeBron, at least possibly over the next 10 days.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Journalist right there. Joy's always giving us new stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Pittsburgh Steelers are 5-5-1 in the last 3 weeks. They've tied the Detroit Lions and lost two road games. They are on the precipice, if you look at their remaining schedule, of going over a cliff. It's not going to be pretty. There is no succession plan. The remaining schedule has got Baltimore at Minnesota, Tennessee at Kansas City. I still think Cleveland's got a lot of good players at Baltimore. They could literally lose all of them. I mean, that's what you're looking at. They could lose all of them. So it's getting a little tense there. And Chase Claypool, the wide receiver, says, I think I know a little something that could help us.
This is something I've said since I was in college because we never had it. But I think like maybe some music would help. But we have music in the warm-ups, and that's always fun. People are dancing, having fun. So I think maybe music would make practice a little more fun and a little more up-tempo. That's my one suggestion. But Coach T's been doing this a lot longer than I have.
Music is the answer. Okie dokie. Mike Tomlin talked about that.
Claypool plays wide out, and I'll let him do that. I'll formulate the practice approach, and I think that division of labor is probably appropriate.
Mike's right. Steeler fans, put your seatbelts on. I like Mike Tomlin. I put him into the Hall of Fame. I like Pete Carroll. I put him in the Hall of Fame. I have had multiple executives through the years say they both run a very emotional culture. Nothing wrong with it. It's won a lot of games. They both got trophies. But when you have a little looser culture and it goes sideways, it can go downhill fast. Eagles, Super Bowl, Seahawks this year, over the cliff. Steelers, I think, are going to go over the cliff. When you have a little tighter, more restrictive culture, I know nobody wants that. Nobody wants the mean boss. New England has slight erosion, and they're back to being good. Cultures matter. There is a best-case scenario for the Steelers. It's not the draft. But it's just something to think about. And I do not think this is a reach. The best thing for the Steelers is to go get Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers. Now, let's just talk Aaron because the flirting between Tomlin and Aaron was substantial. Now, I don't think Green Bay should let him go, and I've said that. I'd rip up the contract today, trade Jordan Love, it's all yours, go. But there are scenarios, and I think what I'm about to say is incredibly fair. Aaron can be moody and a little prickly. Green Bay getting a lot of love. Aaron loses in the playoffs. COVID toe never shakes it. Starts getting criticism. Can't beat Brady. Tired of your nonsense. Overrated. Aaron doesn't take kind to it and decides, I'm out. Pittsburgh is obviously a great landing spot. Okay, he'd get that great defense because Pittsburgh does defense and wide receivers as well as anybody, and they've rebuilt their O-line, and they have a star back. This felt like something yesterday. Aaron Rodgers suggested the Packers coaches are blabbing about his broken toe. He says, you see these reports? I don't know what they're coming from. I don't know who's talking. It seems like there are certain coaches that may have friends in the media they don't realize are actually just trying to report on things. Kind of throwing coach under the bus. I don't think Aaron thinks anything of it to say that, but it shows, don't kid yourself. Aaron's prickly and temperamental and is prone to getting sensitive, and it's all good now. That toe doesn't heal properly, COVID toe or whatever they call it. He and his doctor, Joe Rogan, you know, they can't get it right. Playoff loss, starts getting heat for it. Packer coaches out there throwing stuff out. Steeler fans, you have been relevant for like 30 straight years. There was the 80s, the Packers were irrelevant. By the way, the 80s, the Yankees were irrelevant. There have been decades where Alabama football was irrelevant. It doesn't last. Trees don't grow to the sky. It doesn't last. Put your seatbelts on. You look at that Steeler schedule, you are headed. You got players talking about, we'd be better if we could have music. Man, you better put your foot down on that stuff. Like, just Aaron and the Steelers. Just keep your eye on it. Just keep your eye on it. Hour 3 next.